Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the podcast, Bustle's podcast for radical body positivity, fat acceptance, and visibility for all identities. I'm Marie Southard-Ospina, and I'm joined today by writer and journalist Meg Zulch. Meg has written for Bustle, Hello Giggles, Femsplain, and Bust, often covering the intersection of fashion and beauty with gender politics and genderqueer identity. And today we'll hopefully be dissecting topics like androgyny in fashion, body dysphoria, dressing for safety, and good old nudity. So thanks so much for joining me, Meg.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. To start off with, I was kind of hoping you might be able to give listeners a basic 101 on gender fluidity and what it means to be genderqueer in particular. Unfortunately, I think the notion of gender as a construct and gender as something quite fluid, not to mention the use of alternative pronouns, is still new to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So since we're going to be talking so much about your identity and relationship to body positivity, maybe you could offer some insight.
Yeah. Well, like you said, gender is a construct. And we are just taught that there are these two binaries, male and female. But most people don't fall into just male or female or all the stereotypes that come with each of those things. And the gender binary, like, oppresses everybody, not just, like, genderqueer people. But genderqueer is just, like, you don't identify as a man, you don't identify as a woman. You feel very fluid in your gender. You may present more fluidly or just feel more fluidly. It just means something different for everyone. But I think for me, like, genderqueer has a lot to do with, like, my masculinity and owning my masculinity and feeling body positive about that.
Do you feel like pronouns have been a big part of embracing body positivity more? Like, coming, you know, you came out last year, was it?
Saying, yeah.
You know, and told people you wanted to use they, them pronouns. Those were the ones you identified with. Has that helped you, do you think, on your body pos journey?
I think definitely. I think that using the right pronouns is really important for genderqueer and trans people to feel body positive, because hearing she, her, like, for me, makes me feel out of my body and also makes me feel a little bit insecure about my body, because then I know that people are seeing me and see a woman when they say she, her. And I don't want that because I'm not a woman. But I also have some, like, body pos hangups about, like my boobs or, like, you know, things that are feminine indicators that some days or most days I try to hide. And then when people use she, her, I feel like they're seeing my whole body, and I don't want them to see that.
What's the process been like of getting people to actively use them? Because I know I've seen comments on posts you've written where people's main complaint is, well, this is grammatically incorrect, so my life is a lot more difficult now. And I just...
Oh my God. Okay, that frustrates me so much, because it's, like, not about your comfort and, like, your grammar, whoever you are, like, some English-obsessed person. It's about, like, comfort and making people feel okay in their skin. And I've had to explain that to people. And most people don't treat me, you know, badly if I'm, like, they, them pronouns or whatever. But I think the difficult thing is always to enforce it, because I'm misgendered constantly. And I think usually if it's, like, over the internet, mm-hmm. I can totally be like, hey, it's they, them, or I'm not a girl because people would call me girl or miss or whatever. But, like, face-to-face, it's very daunting.
Yeah, I can imagine. Especially if some people are well-meaning, but they just, it hasn't sunk in yet, or they're not used to it. Like, they might just slip up, and I guess it must be hard to have to explain to people who you know aren't malintended.
Yeah, no, it's really a dilemma, because of course, like, hearing the wrong pronouns makes me feel really uncomfortable, especially now that I'm out and especially now that I'm used to hearing my pronouns around people that I love and trust. And so I know that usually people are well-intentioned, and it's like this, like, tearing inside of, like, this feels really uncomfortable, but I don't want to, like, call them out and make them feel uncomfortable, because usually when I call people out, especially cis people, it's like this long apology that ends up, like, I've talked to my partner about this, who's also genderqueer, about how we hate that people end up making it about them and about, like, how they feel so bad, and then it's not even really, and then we have to, like, comfort people usually whenever they mess up our pronouns, and it's like, yeah, it's a little exhausting.
It sounds like it. I mean, you're a trooper for dealing with it, to be honest.
Thanks.
I was also really interested, you touched upon it a little bit, your kind of relationship to body parts that are so perceived as inherently female. And yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how that's affected your relationship to body positivity. You've written extensively about it, all the while acknowledging your privileges as a straight-sized person, as a person assigned female at birth, who might more or less get away with rocking androgynous or masculine styles in a way that people assigned male at birth or masculine people wearing dresses would not be getting away with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm wondering how all of this factors in, and what are the body pos issues you feel have been especially prevalent to you, given the fluidity of your gender?
I think that as someone who embraces body positivity, it's like difficult for me to come to terms with, like, my relationship with, like, my breasts and my vagina. And because it's like part of me is like, I should love my whole body. Like, there's nothing wrong with my body. My body isn't really gendered. I'm just taught that
certain parts of it are,
of course, and that these parts mean that I'm a woman. But then there's then the other part of me that feels more body positive, like when I, like, wear bras that make me look flat chested, or, you know, just like anything that would cover my figure. And so it's like, I think it's really difficult for me to strike that balance, which is sort of what I wrote about in that story about my decision not to bind, because it feels like at the same time that I want a flat chest, it felt like wrong to, like, or almost like abusive to my breasts. And not everyone feels that way,
of course.
And, like, I know a lot of people that bind, and a lot of people have to bind. Mm-hmm. And
there are people who find it empowering, but
yeah,
you have to go on what's right for you and your body.
Yeah. So I guess it's like the balance of, like, am I being, like, a good body positive human, and am I being a good genderqueer?
So. Yeah. I know that you've also written about, like, not wearing bras anymore, you know, giving them up. Do you think that's helped as well? Because I feel like bras are, you know, another thing that's so inherently, we're told, is feminine and female. So how has that been?
Yeah, that's actually been, like, really helpful, because I think even just the act of, like, wearing a bra, putting on a bra, feels really feminine, even if it could conceal my breasts more. And then I think the other part of that for me is my breasts aren't, like, very, like, perky at all. So when I don't wear a bra...
That fun beauty standard.
Yeah, that fun beauty standard. But, like, that's something that I've learned to embrace, because not in, like, tighter shirts like this, but when I'm wearing, like, looser shirts and stuff and no bra, like, it looks like I have no boobs. And that's, like, so great to me.
Yeah.
So I've really learned to, like, embrace that, like, I don't fit that whatever standard of, like, you're supposed to have perky breasts naturally or something.
I feel like most people don't, to be honest. Yeah. Like, perfectly perky breasts is just another one of these myths. I mean, gravity, it's just a thing. It's,
yeah,
for most people.
Totally. And people just appear that way because they're wearing bras, probably.
Yes.
Now that I'm not, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I actually like this.
I'm glad that you kind of found a workaround then, because, you know, binding wasn't for you, but you were able to find something that was,
yeah,
which is, you know, in this case, stitching the bras.
Totally.
That's great.
And then when I'm feeling, like, super mask, I'd wear, like, compression bras or sports bras.
Cool.
So, yeah, that works too.
It's funny. I feel like clothing in general can be equal sources of empowerment for people or discomfort for people, you know, particularly, mm-hmm, if you exist in a marginalized body. And that can be created by just the lack of available options for marginalized bodies, as well as just general public perceptions of what certain bodies are quote-unquote supposed to wear. And we're slowly starting to see more gender-neutral-ish clothes, you know, and advertising and retail. Target got rid of its gender labels last year in the kids sections, I think, and Zara released the ungendered line recently. But how do you feel about these shifts we're seeing?
Yeah, we're laughing because you know all about how I feel about that. Yeah, I've talked about this a lot to you, but Zara specifically, their ungendered line is really interesting to me, because as a lot of other brands, when they adopt androgyny or gender neutral clothing, it's always cis women who are thin and are wearing like neutral toned masculine clothes, and that's like across the board what androgyny is, like a girl wearing her boyfriend's clothes. And like that's just, it's not helpful for so many reasons. First is that as a feminine person who wants to buy masculine clothes, I want to buy masculine clothes that fit me.
Yes.
And not, I can just go to the men's department, you know, like with these clothes, like at least what I've seen from the ungendered lines, it's like the masculine clothes for women fit the way they would like in the men's department, where it's not actually like fit to, it doesn't like fit their body the right way. And so that doesn't help AFAB genderqueer people. But then what about, like, feminine genderqueer people? And because I think femininity is always left out of the conversation, femininity with, like, people assigned male at birth, you never see those kind of models or those kind of, like, clothing in these lines.
No, like you said, it's always women or feminine people rocking a tuxedo or a suit or cutting their hair into a pixie. That's exactly the focus.
Yeah, and it's like femininity is so stigmatized that it's even worse when people assigned male at birth are trying to embrace it, and they just can't pick it up, I guess, with these lines, which is frustrating.
Definitely. We actually do a segment on the podcast called Words Matter, where we talk about really loaded or controversial terms themselves or catchphrases that intersect with body positivity. And I'd love to just hear more on your thoughts of androgyny, you know, how you would ultimately define that. Because like we've been saying, it's so geared right now in feminine people adopting masculine clothing, but in reality there's a lot more to it than that. So in an ideal world, what is androgyny to you?
Androgyny is just like no gender. And so I think that a lot of the times when people are making these androgynous lines, it's obviously, like I said, so limited. And it's, like, creating this, like, third binary of, like, this is what gender neutral looks like. And gender neutral is, like, a million different things, because there's so many gender identities, there's so many different kinds of bodies. And so I think that androgyny, the word is often misused by brands like Zara, because they don't know or don't actually display, like, androgyny and, like, the full spectrum of gender in their clothes, which is important. And it's like what I perceive that now that there's so much trans visibility in the media the past year or two, that all these lines are popping up for those people, but they're not really for those people.
No, it's just trendy to act as though it is.
Exactly. Like it as like co-opting genderqueer as a trend, instead of like actually catering to the spectrum of people that identify as such.
Yeah. Are there any brands amongst all of this that you feel are actually doing awesome things when it comes to properly representing gender fluidity and androgyny?
I was talking to Mallory the other day about
Smart Glamour.
Of Smart Glamour.
Shout out to Smart Glamour.
Yes. They're the best. And she was talking about, like, obviously her aesthetic and Smart Glamour's aesthetic is very feminine.
Yes.
But she was talking about how, you know, obviously Taylor makes the clothes to bodies, and that she has made clothes in the past for masculine bodies. So I think brands like that, like, get it right. Like, obviously, you know, she's catering to a feminine crowd, but it's not limited to feminine bodies.
Yes.
So I think, like, someone like Mallory, like, really understands, like, she keeps, like, her aesthetic of the brand, which I think is important.
But doesn't gender it.
Mm-hmm. And makes it for every kind of body. Yeah.
That's rad. I know Blue Stockings Boutique is getting a lot of visibility as of late in the kind of indie communities. Do you know about them? They are a lingerie brand that's trying to be very gender fluid and trans inclusive. So I know they've done a bunch of shoots with genderqueer and with trans people and just different variety of styles of lingerie. And I think that's been great. Just, you know, lingerie in and of itself can be very tricky for people to embrace of all bodies. You know, it's a vulnerable thing. So totally. I hope we see more of that as well.
Me too. That reminds me of, because I just started using the, like, Thinx underwear for my period. And I really loved Thinx when it first came out because it was, like, the first ad that I saw was about a trans man on his period. And so I was, like, so impressed that, like, Thinx was this brand that was very trans inclusive and all this. But then they, like, their wording is, like for women with periods or something.
Okay.
And so I think that that's, like, what's difficult about, like, for these brands is that they make these statements, but then they, like, can't commit to being trans inclusive all the way through.
Yeah. I feel like it's a combination of things at times with brands at large. Like, and I see it with plus size fashion too all the time when people think that they are being really progressive because in comparison to maybe what existed 10 years ago, something small can technically be progressive, but it's like they don't go all the way there. You know, it's like a baby step upon baby step rather than these more meaningful endeavors.
Totally. And yeah, like, and for Thinx specifically, it doesn't seem that difficult to just change it to, like, people with periods, for people with periods. Like, that's not, like, a weird wording that, like, makes sense. But yeah, it's, like, interesting that they're willing to take those risks and be trans inclusive and then just, yeah. I don't really see a lot of brands like that really stick to it when they make those statements.
From what I know about Thinx, I feel like they'd be open to the idea of hearing feedback like that. Yeah. I think they are a more open-minded brand. Like, even the fact that they do, like, period underwear and are trying to say, like, you don't need to use a tampon, you know, if that makes you uncomfortable, like, that's very rare, you know, and they are doing something pretty cool. So I do think they'd be like, oh wow, like, we probably could, you know, do better if someone said it. What are some of the main things in a dream scenario that you'd really love to see in gender neutral branding and androgynous fashion?
Well, I'd love to see that clothing isn't, like, sold separately of, like, women's size and men's size, because that's kind of difficult to shop for and to, like, figure out the different sizing and stuff like that. And obviously, like, you know all about that with, like, the plus size community. And I think that would be really helpful for, like, to not have to choose the women's or the men's department and, like, just that experience of constantly feeling misgendered when you're shopping.
And dressing rooms can create the problem as well.
And dressing rooms can't be divided. I think usually they're not, but some stores do it, and that's pretty frustrating. I think it's, like, a lot of it has to do with just changing the culture of, like, how we perceive gender and how we can't, like, be policing people about that. Because even, like when I go shopping, a lot of times when I go to the men's department, I've had sales associates that are like, oh, you're in the men's department, like, the lady stuff's over there. And it's like, that's weird. Like, you shouldn't be saying that to me. And yeah, so I think it's like, not only, you know, embracing a bigger definition of what androgyny is with the clothes that they make, but bring it to, like, the culture of their stores, of stop dividing the departments or the dressing rooms or policing people, like, what part of the store they're shopping in, and the women's versus men's sizing, like, all of that just makes shopping extra stressful for gender nonconforming people.
Yeah. I know a lot of plus size gender nonconforming people who also, it's such a struggle, you know, especially for plus size people assigned female at birth, but who want to dress masculinely or who want to dress androgynously, and there's nothing. Like, there's still so little that can fit a simultaneously fat, feminine, masculine button. Like, it, yeah, there's just nothing. So that's something I want to see for sure.
Yeah. And usually, like, I mean, that stuff is out there, but it's so expensive. And so, like, mm-hmm. you got to have it tailor made. And that's just, yeah, it's frustrating for people who can't afford that, of course.
Yeah. It's also funny because I think about the 60s and when the world experienced, like, the Peacock Revolution, largely started in England. You know, Jimi Hendrix became loved for his paisley coats and velvet flares, and Mick Jagger with all of his effeminate styles, David Bowie and everything that man did for androgyny and femininity. And all of these men were simultaneously sex symbols, by and large, and amongst the first folks assigned male at birth who were vocally open about not being ashamed of their femininity. And, you know, around the same time, homosexuality was decriminalized in Britain. So it was a very progressive time. Do you feel like we've almost taken steps back since then? Especially when it comes to men and masculine people embracing androgyny and femininity?
I guess it's kind of like a mixed bag because yeah. I think that we definitely are we're obviously more conscious of trans people now.
Especially in the last year, I think.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of, like, you know, media attention around trans people and, like, trans activists like Laverne Cox or Janet Mock. But I think that femininity is still so highly stigmatized with men. And, like, and we definitely, like, moved back in the sense of, like, men in the media embracing that, because I really can't think of a lot of examples. Like, the most recent one I could think of was, like, Jaden Smith.
Yeah.
Like, people like that, like, who unapologetically wear skirts on the red carpet. That's, like, very exciting to see, but it's, like, it's so shocking because it's, like, so rare. Yeah.
And I feel like it's also different for Jared Leto or Jaden Smith, who are very public figures, to do it than it would be for the average man walking down the street of New York in a dress. It's just not going to be received in the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, would you say that dressing in masculine styles as a woman or a feminine person is still more widely accepted than dressing in feminine styles as a man or mask person?
Definitely. I think masculine style is more acceptable, like, across the board, generally, because, I mean, I've never been criticized for dressing masculinely in any way, but then my partner, who is assigned male at birth, has been criticized for dressing femininely. And, like, tying back into what we were discussing earlier about, like, safety, where, like, we both feel safer presenting masculinely because femininity is so stigmatized and it's so dangerous.
It can be.
It can be.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote that awesome piece called Why My Public Gender Presentation is Often About My Safety. And I loved the line, regardless of how I'm feeling, I often perform as masculinely as I can in more public spaces. Like magic, my loose button-ups, beanies, and boyish gestures almost always repel unwanted attention, with only a few exceptions here and there. And, yeah, I mean, that's just very different to presenting femininely and walking down a street in the middle of the night.
Yeah, it's a big difference. And it's, yeah, I was really feeling that last summer when I had my internship in Soho, and I usually went to work presenting masculinely and I wouldn't get as many people bothering me at all. And then I wore a skirt, like, in the second week and, like, totally forgot why I wasn't presenting femininely. And it was, like, you know, obviously, like, catcall after catcall, harassment, creepy stuff on the subway. And it's like, you just feel, or I just feel so much safer presenting masculinely. And that's, like, kind of frustrating because I don't always feel masculine, but if I'm ever traveling, especially alone in the city, I will always present masculinely just to protect myself.
I feel like in that piece you also analyzed how it's wonderful to have that tool, but it also kind of makes you then worry that you are rejecting the side of yourself that is feminine, and how do you even balance that?
Right, and rejecting that femininity is empowering, but it's just not around men who want to take advantage of you, around just the misogynistic public. It's like femininity doesn't feel so empowering, and that's really frustrating because I think, like, all my friends who embrace femininity are so brave and, like, are so fabulous and awesome, but like I just don't have that bravery of like proudly flaunting my femininity in public, because it just, and it gets them, you know, negative attention too, but I guess I just don't have a thick enough skin to deal with that.
I feel like we have to work within our own parameters at times, like, yeah. And just for some people, some things will always be more comfortable than for others, and it should be okay to say that.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I really appreciated that you said in that piece again, and now it's not that I don't appreciate the femme people and the women who are really rocking everything traditionally feminine and like weaponizing their femininity, but yeah. Sometimes for me it's just not realistic. You know, mental health is also important, like feeling totally safe, and we all have our own definitions of those things.
Yeah, it's a weird balance, because I think sometimes I worry that I'm betraying my body positivity by, you know, doing something that protects my mental health and makes me feel safer. But yeah, that's something I'm always grappling with.
Femininity is, yeah, I mean, it is tricky, and it comes with a lot of double standards. Feminine nudity, you know, that's something else that you've written a lot about.
Yeah.
Nudity of female and femme bodies has been utilized, as we know, for decades to sell us products, everything from yogurt to gym memberships to tanning potions. You can probably expect a nude or half-nude woman on those advertisements. But then when female and femme nudity isn't for the male gaze and isn't a marketing tool, it's so often shamed. And I'm wondering, yeah, I mean, how does body positive nudity manifest for you? Like, how do you even reclaim a nudity in a way that feels powerful and subversive and also safe?
Well, I think that, like, for me, like, taking nude selfies is obviously... it's very empowering, because I'm controlling the image. And a lot of times when we see feminine nudity, you know, they're not controlling the image, and it's also being consumed for the male gaze. And yeah, and I think that that's really interesting, because I read something about that for like when Kim Kardashian, you know, had her like nude selfie, mm-hmm. and everyone was like freaking out about it. And it was like
telling her how bad a role model she was
when she's like also like nude like a ton of times. Like, we've seen these pictures, and like she's done photo shoots, and it's like, but it's not okay when she completely controls the image and like feels good about herself. And that's really weird to me. And I think that it's really frustrating to me when people assume that you're taking these photos for attention, which is great and fine. And I think that people should take these photos and share these photos for attention if that makes them feel good. Like, look how beautiful I am. Like, that's awesome. Like, I love that. I think that's really exciting. But for me, I've used nudity as sort of a tool to feel like I have control back over my body. And like, after being assaulted when I was 19, I think that embracing nudity in that way and making my nude body visible to myself through these pictures really helped me become comfortable in my skin again. And so I think it's just so violating when, because I got a lot of backlash, because I've written a lot about nudity, like for you guys and for Femsplain. And it's really frustrating how much I'm slut shamed for it, mm-hmm. when my specific use for it, like, no one should be slut shamed for it, obviously, because it's great.
Our period in general.
Yeah, yeah. Like, ridiculousness. But it's just frustrating, because it's like, to be slut shamed when like the reason why I do it is so charged, and so like taking back that power over, in a way, like the person that took away that power and also used those words against me. So it's really frustrating and confusing. And, you know, we really shouldn't assume, like, we shouldn't judge anybody, period, with how they want to use or display their naked body, but also not to, like, assume why they're doing it.
Yeah, I think nudity is just, we're conditioned to believe that it's only about sex and it can only be a sexual thing. And even if that were true, like, that's fine. Sex is not something to be ashamed about when it's consensual and when, you know, it's something that you want. But reclaiming it as something for yourself is still pretty new to a lot of people, and it feels scary to people. And especially if you are a marginalized person and you're, you know, they're taking nude selfies and feeling great about it, I just think that freaks people out. Like, they don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to handle you know, nude images of bodies that don't conform to standards. It's just, I think it blows people's minds at times.
It's true. And I've also, like, gotten sort of a lot of, like, concern trolling of, like, you don't want people to find these images online. And, like, what are you doing? You're stupid. And yeah. It's like, well, like, I don't care if people see my nudes. Like, why should I care? Like, yeah. that doesn't make me, like, an inappropriate, like, unemployable person. It's no. just, I just love my body.
Yeah.
And I want more people to see that. I couldn't look at my body for a while, more for, like, post-trauma than maybe body-negative stuff necessarily. And I think that nudity to me felt dangerous. And it was difficult for me for a while even to be, like, completely naked during sex because it felt dangerous and it felt
vulnerable. Yeah, I mean, you went through an experience that was dangerous, and that, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. So then I feel like then by taking those photos and then looking at them, and it's like, oh, I look so cute. And, like, there's nothing scary about this. Like, my nude body is not, you know, going to make something awful happen to me. It's just chilling here, mm-hmm. looking cute.
To switch gears a little bit, something okay. a little lighter. I'd love to talk a little bit about beauty and makeup. You know, I know yes. you're a huge fan of makeup, particularly alternative stuff. And sadly, I think there still exists this stereotype that preoccupying oneself with frivolous things like cosmetics is a waste of time or a shallow practice. But you think beauty can be not only empowering, but radical. And yeah, I'd love to hear more about that and how you've used beauty in your own kind of gender identity.
Early on, my relationship with beauty was kind of like weird because I saw it as so feminine. And, you know, growing up with my mom, who loved all sort of like the pinks and the reds.
Traditionally and, girly stuff.
Yeah, very like girly, very like... also, like, concealing and, you know, stuff like that. Like, I never identified with it. And I was always fascinated by makeup, but I was like, ugh, this is, like, not for me. and then I guess it was, like, in college when I started, like, seeing brands like NYX or, like, ColourPop and things like that of, like, you know, all these, like, crazy cool colors. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is the fun makeup. This is the stuff that I need. And... so I think that I've found it to be really empowering of, like, beauty doesn't have to be feminine and it doesn't have to yeah. be one kind of feminine.
That's rad. Do you feel like there have been some particularly useful beauty products or beauty routines that have helped you when it comes to body pause? I know, I feel like you've written about lipstick a lot and just, you know, purples and blacks and metallics and... I mean, we so associate lipstick with, like, the perfect red pout and Marilyn Monroe, but, you know, reclaiming all these colors and different narratives to beauty.
Yeah. I mean, lipstick is so empowering to me. And, like, I don't think I feel like I have my whole face on if I don't have my lipstick yeah. on. And I think that it just somehow, like, the way that I've written about it before for Bustle and the way that I still feel about it is that it makes me feel more visible in my identity and comfortable in my skin, because I think often when you see some kind of androgynous looking person like wearing weird colored lipstick or whatever, like, you know that they're genderqueer or gender nonconforming or queer or whatever. And so I think that makes me feel good to like wear my queerness like on my sleeve, I guess.
For sure.
And as someone who's so like anxious and socially anxious and has taken a long time to embrace the fact that they have, you know, or I have the right to take up space.
Yeah.
I think that lipstick sort of helps me take up space in a public place before like I actually have to say anything or something. Yeah. So like wearing like a black lip and like colored eyebrows, which I've done a lot, it's like so like loud mm-hmm. and people are just like, whoa, like you look so cool. And I think, yeah, that just like helps me feel like more comfortable and more like badass and like
yeah.
like I can like I'm allowed to be here and I'm allowed to talk and be like genderqueer or whatever, and it's fine.
Yeah, I think the idea of taking up space in general is so important for mm-hmm. for women and femme people and just, you know, gender nonconforming people, because these are all identities where you're told that you should more or less hide and just you, that you don't have a right to all these experiences that the quote-unquote average person is supposed to have. And yeah, I love the idea that taking up space doesn't even have to necessarily be a physical thing, like a thing related to size, as it's often utilized, and I know why it's utilized that way, and I love when it's utilized that way, but mm-hmm. it can also be, like you said, with just beauty and with kind of controlling how it is people are staring at you. Because I feel like when you're marginalized in any way, you know, if you're queer presenting and it's just obvious that you have a gender nonconforming identity or you're fat, people will probably stare at you. But when you do these things, you're controlling it. You have total control, and you're choosing, you know, to manipulate your image and construct your image in a way that, yeah, people will look, but it's on you. Like, you're, yeah, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, like, you're owning it, and you're like, yeah, I know that I'm this way, and I'm confident about it, and I, like, I'm fine with you staring.
Definitely.
So that, yeah, that feels really empowering.
For sure. Are there some beauty brands that you want to shout out that, you know, have been useful to you?
Obsessive Compulsive Cosmetics is, like, my fave, probably. I love their stuff so much.
And they use men and in beauty ads, and that's like it is revolutionary, you know.
It's very exciting. I love every time I see that on their Instagram, when, because they have like a bearded model.
Yes,
that's always the person that is like rocking the lipstick that's mm-hmm. not very femme, and I'm just like, oh, so cool, because like we need to see more of that. And so they're obviously, they care about their queer customers. Their colors are like, they have like every color, and they're so crazy cool. And then obviously, like, the fact that they're vegan and not, like, cruelty-free is great, because I'm vegan. But I also, like, I really love Milk Makeup right now, too.
Oh, rad. I haven't dabbled in Milk Makeup, but I only hear good things. Yeah, so we do this thing on the show every week where we also shout out a body pause badass, and generally somebody who has really inspired you in any facet of body positivity, but who might not have a huge social following, or who just you don't feel gets enough credit, you know, whatever it may be. And I'm wondering if you have anyone who you wanna highlight.
I totally do. Well, Jacob Tobia is like a gender activist and like one of the coolest people ever. They were on True Life, I'm Gender Queer for MTV, and they just endlessly inspire me with how unapologetic they are about their femininity. Like, that's, it's very like we've talked about it like so much, about, you know, like they're just so unapologetic about it, and they have a beard. Mm-hmm. And I think that usually when you mix, you know, those kind of features, it's like you get like extra people, you know, giving you trouble, and yeah. But they're just like, they totally don't care, and they just like own it so much, and they just look amazing all the time. And like all their like Instagram posts of them going to all these like fancy events and wearing like fabulous gowns, and I'm just like, I wish I was you. Like, that is amazing. Just,
or can
so
I at least
props.
Frame you? Like, yeah. Just look at you every day.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for all of this, for being so open and vulnerable, and just as always, you know, eloquent. Sure. And shedding light on issues that people need to talk about more.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And if people want to find you, if they want to find you on social media and, you know, keep up with your work, how should they do that?
So they can follow me on Twitter, which is at Meg Zulch, M-E-G and then Z-U-L-C-H. And they can follow me on Instagram, which is at @the_LadyJane.
I love your Instagram name. It's good. Cool. And you also made a writing Facebook page recently, right?
Yes, I did.
Is it just Meg Zulch?
It's just Meg Zulch, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, like me on Facebook if you want. Keep up to date with the stuff.
You totally should. Thanks for listening, everyone. This episode was produced by Sarah Barrett, with editorial oversight by Anna Parsons and music by Patty McClave. As always, you can find us on our Rad Podcast Network, Acast, or subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud.